Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This segment of our show, I'll be chatting with music therapist Emily Finnegan. So tell me a little bit about the practice of music therapy.
So music therapy is really, the most simplest definition is the use of music to achieve non-musical goals. So it's a process that's always facilitated by an accredited music therapist. And really, depending on the client's needs, music can be used to target specific goal areas. So this could be something like communication goals, socialization, cognitive goals, motor goals, emotional goals, really all areas of personal development.
So what type of disability can it most commonly benefit in your experience?
In my experience, I primarily work with children with autism, but music therapy practice is applied to a wide variety of individuals with all different types of needs. So music therapists commonly work in hospitals, they work in long-term care facilities, they work in schools, they may work in hospice and palliative care. It's really a wide range.
So what sorts of training do you need to go into the practice of music therapy?
Yeah, you need a bachelor's degree in music therapy or a graduate certificate in music therapy. And then following that, the student would complete a 1,000-hour supervised internship. And then they would apply for accreditation through our national association, which is the Canadian Association for Music Therapy. And then they would be considered an accredited music therapist.
So what sorts of challenges present themselves in the practice of music therapy?
Challenges. It's hard for me to say. I really love what I do. And working with children with special needs, I guess I definitely see a lot of challenging behaviors. I would say that would be a challenge in my own clinical practice. However, I do feel that all children respond to music positively. I think it's pretty safe to say that, you know, all people in general really respond to some type of music positively. You know, it doesn't matter your age or your ability or where you come from. I think everyone has some positive response to some type of music. And this may be different for every person, the type of music, but there is some kind of music that most people would respond positively to.
Now, when you mention positive responses, can you give me some examples?
Sure. I'll talk about my own personal experience with children with autism, but oftentimes when they come to see me, they'll come into music therapy either withdrawn or they may be unengaged. They're not really seeking any interaction with me. So it would be my job to find the right song or the right instrument, obviously something musical that's going to create a spark for that child. And so what I mean by a spark is that moment where the child goes from being unengaged to being engaged, where they go from not communicating to communicating with me. And this could be nonverbal communication as well, right? If we're sitting down with drums and the child is tapping on a drum and I tap something back and then they tap back a response, it becomes this back and forth dialogue using rhythm and music.
So in your time working in music therapy, is there any one success moment that stands out for you?
There are many, many successful moments. I'll give you one example of a young boy with autism who I was working with. He was about 3 years old, and he was nonverbal. So when he first came to music, he was not really interested in me at all. He didn't make eye contact with me. He didn't really make any attempt at all to interact with me. And I would play music on my guitar, and he would just turn away from me, and he would start spinning around and around in the room. So he was really unengaged. And the spinning response was really just not in response to the music, but it was more of a stimming behavior to help him deal with the stress he was feeling in this new social situation. So the spark for this little guy was really a song about ocean waves. So we were using this piece of fabric, it was sparkly fabric, and we would move it up and down like waves in the ocean. And I would sing about big waves and small waves, and we would move the fabric back and forth. And he absolutely loved this activity, and it became my focus to get as much language out of him as possible. So we would start with just vocalizing. So we'd sing, wee, and try to get him to use his voice and use his range. And then eventually from there, we would go on to add single words. So we'd sing, we're in a boat with our friends, now sailing on the blue sea. And then he'd fill in the blank, go up. And so we'd say, go up, and we'd move the blanket up and down. And so he really loved this activity, and it was a fantastic way to really motivate him to use language, which he wasn't typically doing on his own. And then furthermore, too, it was really that ocean song that allowed us to connect, right? When he was coming in, we didn't really have a connection. But that ocean song really allowed us to make a connection, and then from there we were able to expand on his level of participation, his communication, his social connection with others. And now he comes into music where he's greeting me with eye contact, he has a huge smile on his face, he's often giggling, he will take my hand and lead me right into the music therapy room, and he even tries to pick up the guitar, which is twice as big as he is, and put it on my lap. So this is all communication, right? He's telling me that he's happy to see me, that he's excited, that he's ready for music, and that he wants me to play the guitar. And it really all comes down to the music. It's motivating. And although we're using a lot of structure in the music, it's non-threatening. So he's really able to participate successfully, and he can confidently express himself through the music.
So earlier when you mentioned the possibility that a child may tap on a drum, got me wondering, is there any modified equipment that is available for a person with a disability in music therapy?
There is. There definitely is modified equipment. I don't have that much experience using it, but I know that some music therapists definitely do and that it exists. There's little things like, the one thing that I do use is just Velcro straps to help individuals with physical disabilities who aren't able to grasp a mallet. So being able to use a Velcro strap to have them secure that mallet in their hand so they're able to use the mallet to tap a drum. There's also wrist bells and things that can make playing instruments a little easier. But there are more expensive things as well, but I just don't have that much experience using them.
So, if you could send any one message about the practice of music therapy, what might you say?
Oh, that's a big question. I think that overall, music really just allows for self-expression. In my own clinical experience, I feel that it's so important for these kids that I'm working with. They oftentimes do not have the communication skills to be able to tell us who they really are. And music really gives them that opportunity to show the world what they're about. And, you know, twice a year we do music recitals with the kids. So we give them the opportunity to get up on stage and sing a song or play an instrument, you know, whether they're totally independent up on the stage or whether they're supported by a therapist. They have this opportunity to share their music with others, and we fill the recital hall with the support of parents and family and friends and community members, and it just really gives us the chance to celebrate each individual and who they are. So it's really, music is a wonderful tool for self-expression.
So What do you foresee for the future of this work?
I just hope that it continues to grow. Music therapy is getting bigger and bigger, and there's more awareness, always going on. And so I just would like to see that awareness continue and for more people to be able to access the service.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
That's what it's all about, folks. Finding the right way to communicate with a person with a disability. Finding that method that can really reach them. Now, for some people with disabilities, speech and verbal communication might not be as easy. Does that mean there's no way to reach such a person? Does that mean that they can't communicate? No, it doesn't. Things like sign language are designed for exactly this purpose. But if a person with a disability wants to reach out, they will find a way. I've had the opportunity to interview individuals who weren't able to speak, were quadriplegics, therefore didn't have the ability to write. However, people found ways of communicating with them, because there always are ways. Communication is the fundamental of life. If you find a way to reach out and to ask for the help you need, then odds are you'll have a much easier time finding it. For a person with a disability, it's no different than anyone else in society, in so much as we all need to communicate with others. We all need to convey an understanding. It's a universal need, because nobody in this world gets through life without help, without understanding. And organizations like the one that Emily works for provide music therapy. They provide an opportunity for these individuals just to reach out and lead a more full, more balanced life, I think. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Don't you just hate that moment when you're falling apart?
I lost 4 friends over the past year and a half.
I feel like it's a bad thing to be depressed.
Suicide is not an instant choice.
It's not a joke.
I was sitting in my first year psychology course when a speaker gave a talk about mental illness. I learned that mental illness can happen to any one of us at any time. I wanted to help, so I joined others to make change and take action by sounding off about what is and is not working in our schools, communities, and media. You can too. Visit www.soundoffca.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from music therapist Emily Finnegan. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Donna Freeberg, president of Dignity by Design. So tell me a little bit about Dignity by Design.
Well, first off, I want to say I just was on Twitter and I read a great line, which isn't, you know, usually unique, but it was from Richard Branson. He was just stating that great ideas are often formed out of wanting to solve a problem. And, you know, that's been my motto for many years, and the concept and eventual development of Dignity by Design in 2001 was initiated by my parents' individual disabilities. And my father was a leg amputee during World War II. He was a pilot. And my mother had multiple strokes, which had left her in an Alzheimer's-type state for the last 5 years of her life. I had been in corporate high-tech world and in theater and fashion design for over 20 years, and I just basically stepped out of my corporate job one sunny day and vowed to God that I would create a solution to what I felt, and I do feel, is a huge obstacle in the disabled or the physically limited or injured or returning veterans' life, and that I believe is dressing with independence and style and dignity. And that's how the name arrived, and it is Dignity by Design.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the clothing items for individuals with disabilities?
Well, the clothing is designed, it's easy access. It is designed with Velcro closings and mock button closings and no zippers. The concept behind all of the clothing is that it's modified off-the-rack sizing available to the mass market in the disabled and physically challenged market. And you don't recognize or see that it's been adapted. And there's two formats of our product, and it's DBD, which is the wheelchair accessible, and Dignity Fashions, which is made specifically for those with just physical limitations. It was done at tremendous cost to create the ergonomic designs and the beta tests and the prototyping and the recreation of those prototypes, making sure that they were accessible for all of the disabled markets that we were attempting to address. We went into major costs and trials in the manufacturing of the basic models behind all the products. We're currently on hold for additional funding, however, in order to enter the next phase of creation, which is new styles centering on the younger generations of physically challenged but active social and working adults and young adults. We're also looking at new materials and textiles that are eco-friendly, etc. It's a very exciting phase of our business. We're really excited about it.
So, have there been any challenges since the work began creating for individuals with disabilities?
Absolutely. Two of the major barriers to products that are entering the disabled market or markets are the education and understanding of disabilities, that disability isn't a word that describes a person. It just simply states that it's an impairment that they deal with every single day. It doesn't define them, and many people don't even recognize the disabled market, and it's huge. And the second barrier is investors or angel investors. They very rarely understand the market or the market size or this social impact and or the financial return on that investment. All of those are very sizable. So those are two very, very large battles that I've been dealing with for over 12 years.
So, to look at the converse side of things, since the project began, has there been any one success moment that really stands out for you?
Anyone that what? I'm sorry?
A success that stands out for you.
Oh, there are massive successes all through the years. I think, you know, going to some of the trade shows and some of the senior expos or disability expos or ability expos, whatever, I always have people that come to me and give me their life stories and tell me about their disabled son or their disabled daughter or their caregiver for their parents, or and the difficulties that they've had and in dressing, and their difficulties in, you know, taking care of daily needs or getting ready for a job, or the difficulty in being presentable in the workplace, being competitive in the workplace. You know, the stories are very heart-rending, but they keep me going every day. I love the fact that my heart and my soul and my passion is in giving just such a mass population the ability to have more independence and to have more dignity and to be able to step into a social setting or a working setting and feel the same as, and just have a better daily experience in what we take for granted.
So, if you could send any one message about disability life and your own experiences therein, what would it be?
Well, I believe that so much is centered on the disability itself, or the cure of that disability, and at which at times, or certainly presently, perhaps, there isn't a cure. So I think society as a whole should focus on the acceptance and what makes a life complete and dignified while living daily with a disability. We have very few resources here in the United States, globally, for products that are created for this population, and it is vast. And here, 54 million Americans alone are living with a disability. I don't know what is it in Canada, Cam. I don't know, but investors, they don't recognize the businesses serving the disabled. And the business societies don't recognize disabilities. And so products are slow in coming to the market. You know, it's such a deserving market, and it needs a powerful voice.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
All right, thank you.
Issues like fashion design for a person with a disability, not something you'd commonly hear addressed, I think. But they are very important, fundamental day-to-day issues. For a person with a disability, taking on simple tasks, or seemingly simple tasks, rather, such as the ability to get dressed by oneself, to shave, shower, go to work, be presentable, and ultimately reap the rewards of the confidence that can come from that, is an important thing. A person with a disability, especially an acquired disability, wants to retain as much dignity, as much independence as they can, generally speaking. In acquired disabilities, it's going from thinking of a task as just nothing, just something you do by reflex on a day-to-day basis, to something that you have to make a conscious effort to stop and think about. Now, groups and businesses like Dignity by Design are really taking to heart the fundamentals, recognizing that a person with a disability needs not only support and understanding and opportunities, but respect, which is something we all need. Every person with a disability and everyone who stands beside them has a great story to share. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, 4@gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. To employ a bit of wordplay, disability life is not one-size-fits-all. There's no universal standard of which spells out how a disability is going to affect a person. It's a baseline, sure, provides what can be the effect of a given condition, but it really does depend on the person many times, their strengths, their resolve, how much time they take to work on these issues, to think about what innovations can be made. Now, having a disability clothing line really is a great thing. Might not be 100% universal, but it is an improvement. It's a step in the right direction. It can make things easier, because if a disability affects, say, someone in a wheelchair or a given way, odds are someone who has a knowledge of how this can affect a person will be more likely to come up with a design that will work for the majority, if not all of them. And to do that, to provide something so basic and yet so meaningful, it's giving a person with a disability great freedom in saying, this is part of who I am, but at least with certain things, I have control. I have the ability to assert my strength, which is something that needs to be done throughout disability life. A person with a disability has just as much right to fashion, parking access, building access, accessible housing. All these things should be taken into consideration. How can we make things as adaptable, as universal as possible? And this can spark innovation for the able-bodied as well. Many times, disability life, coming up with a new method, a new take on an old favorite, if you will, just looking at things from a different standpoint, can lead to innovation. Can have someone say, this practice is more efficient this way. Why don't I try it too? Look, for example, at wheelchair accessibility buttons on doors. Now, these are great for individuals in wheelchairs, certainly. However, for someone just carrying their groceries and not having a hand free, they can also be of great benefit. It's not something that's often really thought about. What's at the heart of these little things we see day to day? Look at an accessible parking place sometime and then say to yourself, is this just there because? Or is it the story of somebody's need? Is it something that's there for someone who just happens to get around a little bit differently? What should I think of such a person? Should I look at them as having a limitation? Should I look at them and say, this person can't do things that I can? No. Should look and say, they can do things perhaps in a different way, but they have just as much right to access as anyone else. And they have strengths and capabilities, hopes and dreams, just like anyone else. And things like Dignity by Design that look at the little things that are only a small or superficial thing on the surface. Go beyond all that. Ask the question, what does this really mean to a person with a disability? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.